Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. Now this week, I sit down with a Houston comic from here, still lives here, never left. His name is Ali Sadiq. He's in town. He actually filmed in the Houston Improv last week, his 1 hour special. The guy is just a monster comic that I've been following for some time that I thought would be great to have a few drinks with. It was actually filmed quite early, so there wasn't a lot of drinking other than me. Let's get to paying the bills. So Whiskey Neat is brought to you in part by Legent Bourbon, a first of its kind super premium bourbon that melds Kentucky distilling tradition with Japanese blending excellence. You can order a bottle in your area via drizzly.com, and please, as always, drink smart. Gregarious Grump, you guys know my independent bottling brand. It is on Instagram, it's on Facebook. Go give those pages a like and a follow. Over the next month, we will be releasing finally, our five cognacs and about 19 different rums into 12 new states. So this week's episode is also brought to you in part by Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey. They are reviving the tradition of Maryland-style rye whiskey at their Baltimore farm and waterfront distillery. Each batch of their whiskey is hand-blended for consistency. I mean, it's just, guys, we talk about it every week. I love Sagamore. I'm a fan of Sagamore. They're fantastic. They're great. We love them. Next up, Glass Rev. Folks, one of the best imported whiskey portfolios in the country. They've been supporting us for over 2 years. Amroot, Waterford, Blackadder, Murray McDavid, Bimber, and so many top-rated whiskeys. My friends, and I will call them friends, I love them, Roz, Jane, and Bill, the original three dram hunters, are inviting you to become a fellow dram hunter, a group of folks passionate about finding good whiskey. If you go to their website, glassrev.com, and you click on the top bar, mention that you heard about the show or heard about dram hunters from Chris over at Whiskey Neat, they will set aside at least one rare tasting for those who mention Whiskey Neat. Go to glassrev.com, that is glassrev, R-E-V.com, and become a dram hunter today. All right, guys, we are in Dallas this weekend, or last weekend, or starting today. We will be sitting down with Oscar and Meredith from The Office and Ray Fisher from Justice League. It's going to be a great weekend. I'm hoping I can squeeze in a couple more surprises. We'll see what happens. But in the meantime, please welcome Houston comic, Ali Sadiq. Cheers. Ali, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
I'm a big fan. I have such a big passion for Houston comics. I think you, fair to say, you got your start here, right? Born and raised?
I can say fairly I got my start in comedy here. Yeah, I can say that.
One of my proudest achievements, other than doing one open mic set or two open mic sets, was Ralphie Mae's sister delivered my last two kids. Such a Houston legend, you know?
Dope.
I've been following you for a while. I'm a huge fan of your comedy. Obviously, you're in Houston this weekend to film your special.
Yes, sir.
We talking an hour?
Yeah, always. Never. You know, I think I've only done one half-hour special. It's not a special. It's half hours.
I watched it. Yeah.
With Comedy Central, but other than that, I've only done hours.
Yeah. Well, there's a big push nowadays, especially from people. Like, I've talked to Brendan Schaub about it quite a bit, about how a lot of people are doing half hours again, and I'm like, nah, give me the hour. Give me the full experience.
A lot of people don't have the hour. That's the thing. You know, an hour is a long time to keep people engaged that don't know you. You know what I'm saying? Or even people who know you. So the half hour is a good introduction to people to see how it, say if you're doing it for a network. I had a 30 minutes is 22 minutes.
After commercials.
You know, when you add it, because they're only going to shoot 22 minutes of it. You know what I'm saying? Really, they're going to edit it down. So if you do a hour, it's only really 45 minutes, realistically.
Right.
So if you, a person like myself, who I'm doing an hour, 20 hour, 30 every weekend, every show, different material, that's, you know, that's easy for me, but for somebody else who's not doing that, because a lot of people regurgitating the same.
Sure.
You know, material.
I love Bobby Lee, but one of his biggest, he's afraid to do a special, and one of the things he's talked about is like his act hasn't changed a lot over the last, you know, decade.
But with Bobby Lee, it doesn't actually have to, because right. he has a niche. So did Gallagher change his act?
No.
Well, for what? You know, sure. you have your audience and you keep doing that.
Care Top for like 30 years.
Care Top acted the same act as Gallagher.
Sure.
Without smashing fruit, basically. So, yeah, you can just do that until you die. You know, it's not the only people that's required to keep putting out different material are African American comics. Nobody else is required to do that.
What would you say that's probably the hardest thing? Is it because Bert Kreischer, I talked to Tom Segura once. We were talking about how, and we mentioned this right before the show, that there's something more impactful with African-American comics that are far more like they have to murder. Like they're just like they're whereas, you know, Bert takes his shirt off and, you know, he's someone you want to drink with. The level of intensity, the jokes have to hit so much harder. Is that what you think's really causing? Is like you like because you once a joke,
audience.
What's that?
It's the audience, and you know it's so. You know the guy who played Gilligan, right?
Yeah.
So the guy who played Gilligan. Gilligan hadn't been on for, I don't know, what, maybe 2 decades. I go to a Borders Books, and he's there doing autograph signings. And the line is wrapped around the block. He's only done Gilligan. You don't really know him from anything else. Did he have to do anything else?
No.
No. Nothing else. He never had to do nothing else. White people are very loyal to the people who they like.
The
Grateful Dead don't have to release
new albums.
A new album.
Yeah. Ever. Well, I mean, David Hasselhoff is still
David Hasselhoff.
He's huge in Germany. Yeah.
David Hasselhoff. He doesn't have to do, and with Bert and. Bert doesn't have to do a sitcom. Nobody's asking Bert to do a movie. With most white comics, like just like with Asian comics or, you know, Filipino comics or Indian comics, they have, it's not a lot of them. So you don't, what's the choices?
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So you can just do, it's not another Bert. There's not another Doug. They just doing what they do.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? And people going to see them come do that forever. Black comics, to be successful, you got to be in a movie. You got to be in a sitcom. You got to constantly keep recreating yourself. Because what you did the last time was cool, but I saw it.
Sure. Like Kevin Hart, I think, is a great example of someone who does everything. Right, like there's never, it's a constant flow of output. Like there's not, there's not a 40-year-old version 7. Like there's not like where he plays that character that's complaining. Like he's always putting something new out.
But Kevin is the prototype of what Red Fox and Flip Wilson and that's the lineage of black comedy though. Like Kevin is not the standard. Kevin has done everything that all the other greats have done. What has Kevin done that Eddie Murphy didn't do?
Sure.
Or Chappelle. Cat. Cedric.
Cat's a monster.
Cedric, Jamie, Bill Bellamy, D.L. Hughley, Steve Harvey, Eddie Griffin. I could name all the top tier and the second tier, and they've done every single thing that Kevin has done. That's the criteria of being a successful black comic. You have to be able to do everything. And then when there's people that gatekeep from you being able to do everything, then a lot of times people feel like they're not successful, even though they're successful in one lane, but you don't have a movie. But you're a comic, though.
Yeah.
You didn't. Nobody said that you was a thespian. Comedy is one muscle based upon your perspective and your outlook on things that happen to you in your life and your friends. That's not somebody else's words. So to be a great comic, if you black, why do you have to have a sitcom or a movie?
Sure.
Because that's not the gig. If you're a wide receiver, nobody's asking you to have sacks. Oh, you're not a great, Jerry Rice is not a great receiver. He had no sacks. Well, that's not the gig. The gig is to catch the ball. Is that?
I'm surprised you didn't mention Paul Mooney in there. I mean, that guy was just
Mooney just saying, I could have, the list, Sinbad, the list goes on and
forever,
on
yeah.
When you talk about black, I didn't even list the women.
Sure.
So you got Thea Vidal. Thea Vidal is from Houston. Is she not one of the most successful comics of all time? Say, give you an example. Give you, and this is a hell of an example. In Texas, what's one of the most successful comics that people talk about?
In Texas. Well, I mean, Steve Trevino has done really well here, but I don't know that people are...
We're talking about the big names.
The big names.
The people.
Ralphie May would be another one.
The people you're gonna go to comedy clubs and they name and they picture gonna be on the wall.
In Texas. Man, that's a good question. I feel like, I mean, every time Eddie Griffin comes into town I see him, but I don't feel like he's necessarily
who?
Eddie Griffin?
Eddie Griffin, not from Texas.
Oh, you mean from Texas?
Yeah, from here.
From Texas. Gotcha. I don't know. In Texas, who are you thinking?
Like, people don't give...
I mean, besides you.
they don't give Thea Vidal... Thea Vidal is the first, one of the first African-American women to have a sitcom. You see?
Right,
you know,
right.
You got to think of the people that's from here. You know, you have... what's my man that really talks real crazy? His name comes with my... I'm losing my train of thought. Sam Kinison.
Yeah.
Sam Kinison's from here.
Yeah.
You know.
Pentecostal, right before you get hit by that car.
Yeah, and what's the guy who is the dude who I used to hear about all the time? And his face is on the wall. Houston Chronicle did, when they did a story, when they named all these
Houston comics, movies, yeah.
You know, but they left me out.
Sure.
So it just think, they left me out. The only comic here nominated for a Grammy, only comic here with six albums, the only comic here with multiple specials, the only comic here been featured on almost every single network. Was one of the top comics in the country, voted by Comedy Central. But Chronicle left me out. Had no problem with it, though.
Well, and I actually didn't. I was curious about this because at one point I thought you. I knew you were from here, but you did. Do you live in LA or do you still live here?
I always lived here.
Yeah, you never.
And I was the one that never left. The standard of not leaving your city started with me. 22 years ago. So that's the thing. Before I declared that I was never leaving, and people were gonna find me here. Everybody was telling me you had to go to L.A. or New York. That was
sure.
The standard.
Everybody was saying it, yeah.
L.A., New York. So before 1999, had you ever heard a comic say anything about staying in a city? Most people can go back and say no.
No, the entire idea of the American dream is to leave the middle of nowhere, Kansas, and go to Hollywood and become a yeah.
And so when I started 1997, that was the staple. You leave and you go. So I do an interview because I just got signed to do Comic View for BET. So I get out of prison in 1997 of October. I start doing stand-up in December at Just Joking Comedy Cafe. Then it turns 98. I get my full year of, you know, grinding. Middle of 1999, Comic View, I get picked to be on Comic View. So 99, so in a year and a half, I'm on Comic View. And my thing, people ask me, are you moving to LA? I'm like, nah. I'm going to stay in Houston.
Right here, yeah.
Because I was offended that people felt like you had to leave.
Well, and now people are all coming here, right? The entire LA exodus has been Texas, mostly Austin, but coming back here.
But see, they've been here a long time. They'd already been here. So the only time people saying Austin is because Joe Rogan went
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
But was they saying Houston when Tommy Davis and Lavelle Crawford moved here? This time we're talking about Tommy Davis. It was saying,
I didn't know they lived here.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I love Lavelle Crawford.
yeah, this is the thing. He moved here. So it's a lot of comics that live here in this city because this city has a
massive history in comedy.
In comedy. Steve Harvey had a spot here.
Louis C.K.'s first album was here.
You know what I'm saying?
The Laugh Stop, yeah.
Nephew Tommy on the national show, he's from here. Keir Spates from here. It's a plethora of comics that's from here. You have right now Kevin Iso. Kevin Iso has a show, Brooklyn Misdemeanor, on Showtime. He's from here. Started here with me. He's from here. You know?
So you feel like even here in Houston, there's a blatant ignoring of black success.
Of not just black success, the comedic success of people that's from here. It's like when your city not bigging you up.
You mean anyone who's from here?
Even say if you like this is mind blowing to me at times that being in a city where people have national reign across the country, Marcus D. Wiley, national known comic, that's right from here. Yolanda Adams Morning Show. He may be on the clean Christian side, but it's still a national gig.
Of course.
Billy Sorrells, Morning Hustle, national show. Wildin' Out, national show. Multiple recordings, national shows. He's from here. He lives right in Katy.
I feel like part of that is when the Laugh Stop went away, there wasn't anything else there. And I hate to shit on the Improv, which I love the Improv. I'm there all the time. I work with their people. But I don't feel like they necessarily, like you said, push the local. I don't feel like the Secret Group's great. I love Andrew. They've been on the show a couple times. We've talked to them a lot, and we're doing a show with Keisha Hunt and Barry Laminack on the 2nd. But I feel like when the Laugh Stop left, there seems to be a disconnect. Not as hometown hero feel if the Improv's the only spot.
Who did the Laugh Stop produce?
Well, besides Ralphie, I want to say there was, like you said, Sam Kinison. There was a couple.
Bill Hicks,
thank you.
Bill Hicks is the standard here.
Yeah.
That's who everybody.
But I feel like that was the era of comedy back then. We're not in an era of comedy here. Houston, I love Houston. I'm from here. I grew up here. But it does. I go to every show. It doesn't matter if it's, I'm seeing Andrew Schultz in Austin on Monday and we're going to Dallas this weekend. Like I am a comedy fan, but I don't feel like the city sees it. It's a different era. I'm waiting for that next wave of comedy to really hit Houston.
Like,
not the next wave of people, but the next wave of love, like the next wave of appreciation.
Who do they have to appreciate?
Well, like you just mentioned, all these comics that are from here that have never left, all these people.
But if the people don't, if the industry doesn't show admiration towards the people here, that's entertainers.
Sure.
So, give you a overhaul look at something. When you are a person that's navigating the road, if I go back, and because I've been here for 22 years doing stand up, so when I look at the history of how everything plays out, Mo Amir just shot his special here yesterday at the White Oak. A Leaf,
another Houston comic,
yeah,
great comic.
You know, a lot of success. The road that was paved, that we're in a business where people don't pay homage. So you know who DJ Screw is, right?
Yes.
Why?
That's a good question. The '90s. Even now, Bun B and Paul Wall are still like hometown heroes, but it's from a bygone era, right? Like it's not as not. Oh, that sounds insulting. I don't mean it that way. Yeah, it's nostalgia, right? They say the number one thing that sells more than sex is nostalgia, especially to white people. Like you mentioned earlier, we go and see Gilligan after 30 years of him not even being on the air. I don't even know what he looks like now. But
he did now.
Is he really? Not good. Yeah, so not good.
So
no, not doing signings anymore.
But why do you know DJ Screw? Because everybody talked about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every single rapper paid homage to Screw. Every single rapper from every side of town. When you pay homage to something, you push. The only reason you know about New York rappers or Atlanta rappers or any Snoop, because the people from the place push the people.
Sure.
The only reason you know about most people, because they push by their people.
So what's the solution then? What do you think?
The people gotta have the app, like I hear people, you know, they come in the city and they come to improv. Like the improv is like going back to something you said about the Laugh Stop. The Laugh Stop was fucking. Nah, I don't want to curse in the show.
You can curse.
The Laugh
Stop. We'll bleep it for radio, but the
Laugh Stop was the worst place to me.
Oh, really?
The worst place.
I think for me growing up, I was so young and obviously not within the industry. I didn't work there. But a lot of I think at one point Ralphie actually sued him for falling to the stage. But the history, when you think of historical significance comedy scene within Houston, it's the Laugh Stop.
Just Joking. Just Joking produced more stars than anything ever came out of the Laugh Stop.
Wow.
Do you know, let's go to the first three in-house hosts of Just Joking Comedy Cafe. Arnez J.
Mm. Killer.
Bruce.
Monster.
Earthquake.
I knew you were going to say Earthquake.
These are the three standard hosts, sure, of the club. Like, this is who's there every time the doors open. Then it goes to Mike Epps. Then it goes to Terry Gross. Then it comes to me. So
do you think
every
it's not
great comic I've ever seen, I saw at Just Joking. The only person I've ever remember even hearing about that was at the Laugh Stop was Chappelle. Him and Pete was super cool. I remember going to open mic at
So let me counter argue you for a second.
Go ahead.
So everyone you mentioned, didn't they leave? And I would say that they're legendary, right? I mean, Earthquake and Bruce Bruce.
And they wasn't even from here. She had an apartment that she housed me in. This is where they started. So you're talking about looking at Arnez and Bruce and Earthquake from the beginning.
Sure.
They honed their skills. So you ever seen the movie Top 5?
Mm-mm.
With Chris Rock?
I don't think so. Can you pull it up?
Chris Rock was in the movie with Cedric Entertainer, and it was a big thing. That's when everybody started doing top five lists after this movie came out.
It's a movie called Top 5? Wow.
Yeah. So in this movie.
What year was this?
2014.
Yeah.
Oh, not that long ago.
Yeah. not that long ago. Chris Rock just did this movie.
And it's Top Five Comedians?
No, it's a movie called Top Five about his coming up and his whole thing. So it's a scene in this movie to where Chris Rock is in a comedy club and he leaves because this dude brings his prostitute to his room and he think the pimp is gonna kill him because the girl stepped, and he leaves the comedy club and doesn't perform. Just joking. The actual story.
I'll watch it tonight. Troy Mersal.
And Alice.
It's a real story?
That's the true story.
The true story?
That happened here.
I'll watch it. I'm telling you, man, I'm such a fan. We spend a lot of time. Right now, the only thing we really have, I mean, there was one place on the South Side that did, what do you call it when you get defensive driving?
Comedy defensive driving.
Right off of Fuquay.
Mm-hmm. That was the old spot. They closed down.
Yeah, there wasn't much.
Danny Martinez's spot.
It wasn't great. And then now we've got the Secret Group and the Improv, and that's pretty much it. And we started booking shows, our first shows on the 2nd. And just because I want more, there feels something missing here. Like, if you're a fan of comedy, the most you can hope for is, you know, who's coming to town? Who's going to be at White Oak? Who's going to be, you know? But there's not like a, I feel like there's a missing comedy scene here. Like a well-known club that everyone goes to. I mean, the Secret Group, I don't know if you've ever been there or performed there. I think the max they hold is like 200-something. And we're doing 400 on the 2nd. And then you've got the Improv, which is like 450?
Five.
So something's not here that I think is what's missing.
Which is?
I don't know. That's a good question. And I think more people should say, I don't know when they don't know, instead of coming up with some bullshit answer. But I don't know what's missing. I know that there are people who love comedy here.
This is a music-driven town.
You think so?
Name another genre that gets more airplay than music here. I mean, the biggest stars are musicians.
Bayou, City Music Center, White Oak, Warehouse Live, House of Blues, all of it's mostly music.
The success of Houston, the success of this city, did it come through comedians or actors, or it came through artists, whether it was jazz, blues, R&B, or rap? Nobody, Coretta Devine is one of the most successful actresses of all time. She's right from Acres Home. People don't talk about Coretta Devine. They don't talk about Isaiah Washington. He was on Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, I love him.
And he's right from Missouri City.
He's a big whiskey fan. We invited him to the distillery a couple weeks ago. He came by. He's awesome.
So just think, if this city had the same appreciation for artistry as Austin.
Sure.
Austin, people go to see anybody for any reason on any day.
Sure.
Rain, sleet, or snow.
50 different small places.
At any time.
Yeah.
It's the same with Memphis, because this is the thing. The city doesn't have a walk-up spot, so to speak. So you've been to New Orleans?
Sure.
Been to Memphis?
Yes.
Been to Austin?
Oh, yeah.
What's all the same? You got one street that everything's happening on.
Yeah, we'll park about a mile away, and there's something to do. As far as you can walk.
Until your legs get tired on both sides of the street. You can hop in any spot. I can stay here for 20 minutes, then go over there for 20 minutes. I can do this all day to 9 in the morning.
So are you happy here, or are you waiting for something to change? Or what you feel like you've identified the disconnect, that there is not a place that you can wander here? There is some stuff in the art and the museum district, but that's not really, you're not going there for entertainment. So what's the fix?
I'm not trying to fix it. I'm trying to fix the people.
Sure.
Once the people have a different appreciation for the artists that's in their city, because the thing is, I know this is a labor of love for me to even shoot a special here. Because when I was first coming here, shooting things, I brought HBO here, I brought Showtime here, I brought comedy. Everybody who's ever shot anything with me has come here.
Sure.
Either come here, or I'm going to fly there for a day because I'm not leaving here.
Right.
So the industry in turn started looking at people outside of LA because I wouldn't leave. And it started with Comedy Central. They were like, yo, we found him in Houston.
What else is out there?
Let's go out and start looking for more people. So then you start hearing people talk about staying home. But I've been saying stay at home since 1999.
Yeah. I mean, Steve Trevino, I talked to him about it a little bit, and he gave up early. He was like, the LA thing's not for me. I moved to the hill country in Texas. And as far as I know, he kills it. He every time he comes into town, the place is packed to the brim. But are people necessarily talking? Is he in the zeitgeist? I don't know. But
it depends on what you want, though. That's also another thing. I don't want to do anything but stand up. So I don't have to be in this chasing on this wheel of what is out there. I'm on the road every weekend.
So you are. You kill it, man.
You know, it's like we all the way into January booking already. So it's like I don't think I'm playing the game the same way other people are playing it. Because I'm cool what I'm doing. Most people are like, well, what, you know, you pull up my IMDb, you will see a lot of things on there that you have no idea that I did. Like, oh, he was on Punk'd. Didn't know, did you?
Sure.
You know, it's like, it's so many of these things. I could give people a list of things and they'd be like, well, I had no idea that you was on there. But if I was a rapper, I'm on XM radio, so people across the country know me because I'm played on all 5 XM stations.
Right.
But what station here plays? Like, more people know me now here because I'm on Magic 102 from 2 to 6 every day. Every day. So it's a thing when it comes to the industry. It's a fold. People got to want to love the people from their city as well.
Sure.
Like, I'll never forget this. I'm listening to an interview at Billboard Awards. Mad Hatter is doing an interview with Monica. Monica is huge at this time. It's a dude named Uncle Sammy or something like that. He got some little weird song, and Monica asked Mad Hatter in the middle of her interview, are y'all playing Uncle Sammy's song? Hatter was like, yeah, I think we are. Yeah, y'all should play him. He's from Atlanta. We support him.
Wow.
In the middle of her interview.
Just surprised her with it.
Has nothing to do with her interview, but she's supporting another Atlanta artist. Biggest thing, I'm on Deuces and Merrill. I'm doing the show, and the man asked me, he said, man, who you listening? Who you listening to? Who you like out of Houston? No, he said, what artist do you like? I said, Beat King. Somebody from Houston.
Sure.
So I'm in London. I'm doing this show, and the lady said, we're gonna do this thing where we go to your music and your phone and we play the first song that you listen to. So this is going out over a national worldwide thing. So they doing other people first. And I'm going through my phone and I'm deleting all the Sade. Sure. And all the stuff I listen to, just so when they get to my phone, the first person they push would be Toby. He from A-Leaf. He's my friend.
Sure.
So
I feel like you're ahead of the, your mind is thinking so much more, almost aggressively, proactively ahead in those things. Like you're committed to this belief that we should be pushing more often. There should be creating an environment of support for local talent.
How many comics have you interviewed from Houston?
Probably
quite a bit.
Six.
Six. You ever ask them who their favorite comics were? Who their influences were?
I don't think so. I think we talk about who are, like, I'm sure at some point every legendary comedian's come up, right? But, you know, Andrew, Dusty, Brad, Charlie, there's been a few. Q Agenti, he's not from here, he's from Nigeria, but he's incredible.
Agenti, all them started all them.
Sure.
Who did they mention? Probably legendary names, right?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But didn't give a fuck about the people who trained them here.
Right.
That's what fucking Houston artists do all the time. I've heard so many artists from here that's Houston comedians that I personally wrote for, trained, watched you come up, started you, and then you get in the interview and the first thing you say is something about some fucking New York comics or some legend that you idolize. What the fuck Richard Pryor had to do with you? Did you ever meet him?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Zahed's another one. Like, I love Zahed. And then he's moving to New York. He feels like he's spinning his wheels here. Like he needs to go elsewhere. So it's
because they follow these things and these ways and don't know. Mass majority of the people who move other places still call me to navigate the other places that they at.
Sure. For advice.
But see, that's the thing. When your mindset, the reason why you know LA and New York for certain things, because everybody goes there and bigs that up and say, fuck their own city.
Right.
But the thing is, if you stay home and you big up your own city and you do things in your own city and you create in your own city, you create a bubble. That's what rap artists did here. You think Zero cares about what's going on in New York? Or Slim Thug cares about what's going on in New York? Or Bun? You know what I'm saying? Or Kiki? Beyonce, Destiny trying to give a damn what's going on nowhere else? Solange don't care? It's the culture of the artist and the people. If you big up your city and you big up and you support the people that's in your city, because why do people think that somebody gets big and then want to come play for the people who didn't support them on the way up? That's why most people
leave and don't come back.
Leave and don't come back and then get in interviews and don't mention where they from.
Because they weren't happy there. Man, you're making good points. I mean, you're making me want to drink more.
It's a thing about support. It's like, if you had to rely on only waiting on artists to come in town to do your show and never had no access to people that was in town that was doing things, that'd be weird.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, so you, and then what if somebody not coming to town? What if you can't get access to them? So you can't call somebody else that's in town that's maybe doing the same thing as somebody, like, Toby, man, that's big that Toby was in Beyonce's Adidas video. Commercial, actually. And he got a movie thing that's coming up. It's so many things that people are doing that's bigger than what people in the city would think they were doing. And I think the artists got to learn to support their own people. Like when people ask me, who your comedy influences? Before I get to anybody that's legendary or out of town, it's going to be six people that I'm going to mention from here first.
Sure.
Dez White, Billy D. Washington, Dave Lawson, Marcus, Kier. I'm going to mention the people who are instrumental in my development first. Versus, the Richard Pryor was my comedy influence. And Paul Mooney, you ever met him? No. How they influence you? Because see, the way I do it, nobody can do it the way even with me sitting there. Bill Cosby sat down first. Then next it was me.
I'm not familiar. Who's that?
Bill Cosby, great guy. He sat down 43 years later.
Fun to drink with.
I sit down. But I can sit down and also move around because my body language and the reason why I sit down is different on how I navigate my stories. I sit down because I'm tired, and two, I'm gonna draw you in.
Sure.
As soon as I sit down, people, the first thing be like, why are you sitting down? Now,
It feels more cozy, like we're connecting.
But you ask other people, man, what made you sit down? They'll lie and say some other nonsense. No, you start sitting down once you start me sitting down on TV. Because now we go to what industry gonna say. No, y'all's a goddamn lie. Because we were shooting shows with him, and he was the only comic on the show that we had to find a chair for. And then he was going on TV sitting down.
Well, didn't Chappelle start the slap the mic on his leg? Like, and then everybody started doing the same thing? Where he'd say a joke and then hit the mic hard on his leg, and people would be like, stop fucking doing that, you know, stealing from him directly.
Yep, if I go back and think about it, that was the first one that did it on TV.
And you started to sit down?
After Bill.
Right.
Because yeah, it wasn't no other comic. I was in the comedy clubs for 22 years. Wasn't nobody else sitting down. I waited until Bill was way clear before I started sitting down. Because you ask most people how they sat down, they'll never tell you the goddamn development of it. So I know it's not true.
Sure.
If you ask me, how did I start sitting down and why I started sitting down? Because of the five phases in the development of how funny you fucking got to be to sit down. I used to move all around the stage like a wild man at first. Then I saw Dez White. Dez White would come out and sit his drink on the stool. And he would never take the mic out the stand. And he would sit there and he would be talking. Doing and be funny as all outdoors, and I'll never forget the funniest shit I ever heard him say to me was so subtle. He said, people be asking me all the time, Dez, why you don't hold the mic? He said, because it has a stand. Let the stand do its job. And I thought that shit was so funny.
So funny, so simple and genius.
So now you go from Dez to standing there still to Paul Mooney. The next step from going down is sitting on the stool. Paul Mooney came out, sat on that stool. I came from being a wild man all over the place to standing, to sitting on the stool, to then when I got really, really comfortable, I said the next step is to sit down. The first time I ever sat down was in 2007.
Imagine, it's interesting to me that you would remember so specifically something as simple as sitting down as a thing.
I remember the first day I decided to do it, I was on the road with DL, and I told his road manager, Gary Monroe, I said, I'm going to sit down. I want a chair on stage. He said, you think you're that funny yet? I said, yeah. He said, shit. And then I remember what he said. He said, let's make this shit even more difficult than that. No introduction, no music, no nothing. And I said, bet. And I walked out there. The mic was just out there. I grabbed that mic. I moved the stand out the way, and I sat down. And I said, hey. And people, and I've been doing that since 2007.
Every time?
Every single time. If anybody went on NBC and watched me on NBC, I went from Bring the Funny, in 2 minutes. Now I got 2 minutes and 30 seconds. I'm a storyteller. I'm trimming stories, 16-minute stories down to 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And I'm walking out, chair on stage, walking out, sitting down. Hey, national TV, half hour, same thing.
Just huge confidence. No one can tell you're nervous.
You can't ever tell I'm nervous. And I'm nervous every time because I have a healthy respect for the craft and the people. So I don't go out there like, oh, I got it. No, I got to feel it and know that they with me. So it's, before I do something, it's very well thought out because I try not to do the other things that other people do to make sure I stand out, even away from the stores.
I've got two more questions, but how are we doing on time? If we need to wrap it up, we can. You want to mark this?
I got 7 minutes. We do a solid hour.
All right. So the You mentioned the five stages of development. Mm-hmm. What I've never heard. Is this a particular well-known thing within the comedy community of when you become a opening? Because there's this ignorance that happens with people. People assume if they see you at day one, oh, well, this guy's not funny. He'll never be funny. And they don't realize people like Louis C.K. or any of these people, Bill Burr, who we would consider legends now. But in 2002, they weren't – nobody really talked about them, right? So what are the five stages and where – how do you know what stage you're in and when you're complete?
You have the beginning. I had a beginning when you very new and you learning, and then you have the next stage at the beginning, your creative stage.
Sure.
Because in the beginning you are not creative and by no means. People think that they are creative. All that shit has been heard before and regurgitated by several people. Then you get into your creative stage where you think that you feel like you got something, but it's not really developed and you working.
Sure.
And you kind of stuck because you got 15 minutes of it, then you got 15 minutes of fluff. Then you get to this stage to where you are the feature. Because those stages are host stages, which are very important stage, which is very important stages. You should be hosting a lot in these particular stages, because when you're trying to be creative, you need space to do it. And as a host, nobody's asking you to be great.
Sure.
You're just warming it up. So you go out and you do all your creative shit and try to get legs up under all these
comfortable
things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're not a beginner anymore. You in the creative stage. Now you writing and you trying to find shit. So now you get to where you featuring and you're presenting the things that you write. And now it has to be well crafted, because now you're working to another stage to becoming a closer. Not a headliner, closer. Headliners put asses in the seats. Closers are strong enough to close the show. And you know where you get your closers from? These particular places that you say don't exist anymore. Well, somebody does a one-nighter and they start to get their legs up under them and knowing what to deal with. Because these are different phases. When your feature is the easiest 20 minutes in comedy. You're already creative. You already know what you do. You ain't nervous. You got 20 minutes. You go out there, you do your thing, and then you bring up DL or Cedric or whatever, no pressure on you at all.
Sure.
When you start coming to closer,
that's tough.
Going towards the headline thing. So now you're a closer. You're strong enough. People, they can get bodies in the building. You seeing now you're dealing with shit like the check drop in the middle of your show. Nobody's listening to you no more because they're doing their checks. And now you're working on timing and how to navigate a room and all this placement of shit. Now you go into the headliner stages where now somebody's paid $50 to see you. You got to be good now.
So do you feel like there is... And how do I, you don't have to name names, but do you feel like there are headliners that aren't in the headliner stage?
Yeah, several.
Aren't in stage five?
Several.
That's stage five, right? Headlining?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So how do you check yourself in that regard? Like how do you, are there times that you felt like you were in that stage and then other times you questioned if you weren't there yet?
I've always been in the right stage at the right time. Always. I've in comedy, I've been career perfect when it comes to development. I've been damn near perfect. Because you know how other people accept TV, like somebody bring them up and they talk, say all these credits and shit they've been
sure,
on.
Sure, sure.
Now somebody did it one time and they never done it again. And I say, yo. Because if you do it, I walk on stage and say, I've never been on none of that shit. And I tell people, hey, don't ever introduce me to something I haven't not done.
Sure. You don't need to sell me.
I've always been that. When I was a host, I did host shit. I didn't go into the green room. I watched. I was on time. I did. When I got to being a feature, then when I got to being a feature and I start going towards the closer stage, I was on the road with DL. So it's two-man shows. I'm going out doing 55 minutes because now I'm being trained. Hey, you're going to eventually go to closing. I need you to know how this shit navigates. And so I'm in the hardest position because I'm coming up. The room is cold, so I have to host first. Then I had to start featuring because the room is cold.
Sure.
So that's 55 minutes before he come up and do an hour 10.
You got to do it all.
Which is no problem because I'm thinking that, oh, this is hard at first. Then I start thinking, you know something? I used to get in trouble when I was playing basketball and coach used to make me run horses. You know, he had to run, touch, run. But when the team would get in trouble, they would have to run horses. I was never winded because I had been doing this shit. Sure. I'm always in trouble. Y'all just now getting in trouble. So I took the fact that I had to do that all the time as I'm just getting better. So it didn't bother me. So I put people in that position and they folded on me. Oh, man, I got to go out and do all this time. They wasn't ready.
Sure. So where can people find you coming up the next few weeks? Where are you going to be?
Philly. I'm at the Punchline of Philly.
Then next weekend?
Yeah, next weekend.
Which will be, this will air next Friday, so that weekend, this weekend. Yeah,
this weekend. Yeah. Then I'm in Omaha. I don't even know the club I'm in Omaha, though, because it's very new. This is my first time ever even going to Omaha.
Well, listen, I appreciate you doing this. I appreciate meeting you. I look forward to continued following. I'm a fan. I've been a fan for a long time. So thanks so much for doing this. And,
oh, man, pleasure's all mine.
Appreciate it, man.
Thank you for supporting.
Absolutely.
Houston Comics.
Cheers, guys.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.